live. It's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Cause every minute, every hour, you'll be shaken by the strange and mighty power.
Time for that Monday basketball talk. I look forward to this segment each week. We always bring in a great friend of mine, great friend of the show, James Holas, who is our NBA analyst. And I think social media was kind of ablaze last night with the All-Star game. A lot of hate. I think there were some good things. I think there were some flat-out awful things. We'll discuss that. We'll also talk second half of the season. James is with us right now over the phone. And James, always a pleasure to get you on.
What's up, my man? We got a lot to talk about. Let's dive in.
The new format of the All-Star game. Did you like it, yay or nay?
Short answer, yes. I give them an A for effort. But if you give me a complete answer and break it down, the NBA is to the point where they're overthinking. They way overproduced it. The players themselves said it. Like, they're having to send off for TNT in the middle of the last game, with like a 15-minute break in the game, like threw off the energy. You could see when they came back, they basically fell back to the posting kind of basketball, and it was very anticlimactic. There's a meme about having to admit that the worst person in the world made a point. Draymond had a great point when he said the Rising Stars should not be playing on All-Star Sunday.
Yeah.
That's a great point. So overall, I give them A for effort. They did not execute it well. And something about just the, playing to 40. It saps something out of the game. So A for effort, but I'm going to give them a D minus for execution.
I feel, I kind of hate myself for agreeing with Draymond Green pretty much all weekend long. I think that we all know there's problems, right, with All-Star Weekend. But in the same sense, the players have themselves to thank for it, right? So if the players are going to sit down and they're going to complain about the way All-Star Weekend is handled and why there's been so many tweaks and twerks to it, I think you have to take a long look in the mirror. I think we're about done with that particular generation of players that kind of put this game. It's not as if this game was ever fierce competition throughout 48 minutes. I think people that have that thought they're way, way off. But I think the older current generation of players, I'm talking about the LeBrons, the KDs, the Stephs, you look at those guys right now, I think that generation of player has to look themselves in the mirror and say, well, there's so many tweaks going on to All-Star Weekend because of us, and that's just factual.
Exactly. Like, it's, again, like that same meme where people, they show the kid with a boot on his head, but they back off, he's holding boot to his own head. The players made him, like, it's been a mockery these last few years, and you're right. I think people have this imagery of Michael and them playing hard. No, they BS too. There's a bunch of 155 to 130 games back then too. But, it got to the point where, like, it was a glorified layup line and just dunks and shooting from half court. Like, it was basically just, there was no kind of, like, competition at all. And that's not what people want to see. I get it. But at the same time, this is their week to recover and rest. There has to be a middle ground, though. And the player took it too far. The NBA now is over-tinkering. And no one's happy. Because the fans who complained about the lack of competitiveness don't like this either. Another one go back to East versus West. So it's, yeah, hopefully the NBA just takes a deep breath and resets and we go back to it. It's a showcase, man. It's a weekend of pageantry and famous players and the celebrity game and dunks and three-point contest. That's what it's really about. Stop crying about the game. It's never going to be competitive. These are multimillion athletes who, they're worrying about deep playoff runs. They don't want to get hurt in an All-Star game. So it is what it is.
The biggest issue I had all weekend, James, was Chris Paul and Wemby in the skills challenge. I thought that was absolutely awful. Look, you go to an All-Star game. Let's say you buy a ticket to an All-Star game. It was just here in Utah a couple of seasons ago. People know what they're buying a ticket to. They know this. If you think you're going to Game 7 of the NBA Finals, you may be paying NBA playoff ticket prices to get into this All-Star game, but you're not going to see NBA playoff intensity. You know that going into the All-Star game. When you buy a ticket to the weekend festivities and not actually the game, you are looking at a showcase for talent, not manipulation. And once again, Chris Paul does exactly what Chris Paul does best, and that's piss off the NBA audience. I thought that was the worst thing I saw all weekend.
Yeah, and it was the ultimate, like, everything in Chris Paul wrapped in one.
Yep.
He's always trying to game the system. He always wants to be the smartest guy in the room, and he is really smart. But instead of just being talented and putting on a good show for the fans, it's all about dumb stuff like that. You're absolutely right. It encapsulates everything with Chris Paul, and it also tells me maybe trying to get him out of San Antonio, right? Because now it's not just him doing the things. This is not a good look for Wemby, right? This is your first time on the big stage, brother. You're showing the world. Show the world that you can shoot threes, and what do? You go up there and then you let Wemby jump on the grenade and say it was his idea. Even if it was his idea, Chris Paul, as the vet, you take that bullet. Don't let Wemby say that. You know what I mean? So, his time as a superstar player is way past. The time as a high level starter is past. Maybe it's time that we just, you know, I don't like him in San Antonio anymore. And it's something that happened at a exhibition event for me to say that, but it is true, man. It was a disgrace what him and Wemby did.
I agree. That was the worst thing I saw all weekend. Like I said, I expect to see some sort of competence, some sort of competitiveness. And we've seen guys in skill competitions before, right? Steph didn't want to lose to Sabrina last year. It was fun, but you know for a fact he didn't want to lose, right? I think we've seen some of the skill challenge at times. It's been pretty entertaining. I thought that was the worst thing that I saw all weekend. All right, James, let's move on from the All-Star game. We could spend all day talking about this. I think we're going to go in a circle. We all know it is what it is at this particular time. Second half of the NBA season. And to start the talk on the second half of the season, I want to start by talking about the Lakers and the Hornets, because we see these two teams coming up on Wednesday, and there has been all of this hoopla with the Mark Williams and Dalton Connect fiasco. We don't know what's going to happen with Mark Williams. I would assume he plays for the Hornets again this season. I would assume they're handling this a little bit differently, though. He seems to be very upset. We thought that maybe the Hornets were going to file an official complaint with the NBA. I thought they did. Adam Silver said over the weekend, no, they did not. And this just so happens to be the first two teams to get back into action on Wednesday night.
Yeah, man. So I'm going to have to give an alternate possible based on nothing theory. Maybe, just maybe, the Lakers kind of jumped at this move. You know, obviously it's been disputed who initiated the talks, whatever. Sure. But they made the trade, and somewhere as that trade was being executed and was going down, one of their analyst guys spoke up and was like, you guys know this guy really is not a good defender. And you know we just gave up an awful lot for this guy. We might have overstepped our bounds here. I tried to say this when the trade went down, but you guys weren't listening. And maybe, like, in the Lakers' front office, cooler heads prevailed, and they pulled the, oh, we found something in his physical, we don't want him now thing. That's another theory I have. But, it's definitely going to be fascinating watching the Lakers because, sure, offensively, they're going to be amazing. But they just lost to the Jazz by 20 because they can't defend. And it's not going to change. So they have some things to figure out. Jackson Hayes isn't the answer. They cut Christian Wood. They got to find Alex Len is not the answer. This is going to be really interesting.
Yeah, when I agree with your theory, by the way. I think you're spot on. I think at some point the Laker front office got together and they realized, okay, Mark Williams is we overpaid for a guy that cannot defend and a guy that does have some injury issues. I agree with you 100% because there's nothing in that physical. There can't be anything in that physical, James, that would scare you off of trading a rookie for a guy who is still on a rookie-scale deal, right? And that's the thing with Mark Williams. You're not inheriting a $200 million contract. This guy is still on a rookie-scale deal. He is still extremely young in the league. That's what makes me think that the Lakers maybe, are playing some gamesmanship here and had some buyer's remorse.
100%, man. The fact that, you know, like you said, hey, Luka's a generational guy. They want to strike while the iron's hot. They made this move, and it sounded great because they looked at the numbers and they saw the highlight video. And then, the perfect way to describe it, buyer's remorse. And they did. Then they backed out under the guise of, you know, hey, I heard somebody say it on TV. I read all the comments that the Lakers front office made after the trade before the physical. We vetted this. We vetted that. We're confident. We're good. So I'm not buying it, man. I'm not buying it. Something fishy in the state of Denmark.
Okay, so we've seen Luka play a couple of games now with the Lakers. I don't believe he's even remotely close to being in game shape. I was at the Utah game just last week. We saw him live and in color. He's moving at 60% speed. There's obvious, and he hasn't played since December. I think we got to be fair here, right? He hasn't played since December 25th, and so it's going to take Luka some time. But when Luka is right, and if you're going to have to rely on LeBron, I think he's going to have to play the five at some point. We saw that against Utah and L.A. He had to play the five at some particular time. Are you convinced that this team can cause some issues in the postseason, knowing that Jackson Hayes, he's their last line of defense because Alex Len is not an NBA caliber center? I don't know why this guy is in the league right now. I guess because he's 7'1". You can't convince me that there aren't better options out there. But nonetheless, are you convinced that this team can cause some hay?
I am their ceiling is definitely raised, so I'm convinced, and I think right now they are sitting in fifth.
Fifth.
Basically tied for third. Like they're all kind of jumbled up third, fourth, fifth, I think. I am convinced, man. Just when you have a talent like Luka and a brain and intelligence like Luka and LeBron, they're gonna take even the worst part of chicken and make chicken salad. But I mean, other than that, like you still got Gabe Vincent. You know, Reeves is definitely a high level third guy, but again, no defense, and they just kind of a hodgepodge of parts. So, hey, LeBron and Wade and Bosh that first year record wasn't great, and they didn't get it done. And they actually had, you know, more high level talent. So they can make some noise. They might upset somebody, but I know that a elite defense that has some discipline is going to give them a hard time.
Elsewhere in the Western Conference, now that we've seen a couple of games following the trade deadline. But you know what? Before we talk about anybody else, I want to get your perspective on the Mavericks, because this seems like it was so long ago, but it's also a formality. I don't know that Anthony Davis plays again this season, James, so I guess I can get the flip side of the Luka deal. We're talking about the Lakers not having a big. Dallas isn't going to have a big either, because, again, I don't believe we see AD again the rest of the season, and if we do, it's going to be so late, and the way Phoenix is actually capable of playing, I wouldn't be surprised if the Mavericks find themselves outside the top 10, honestly.
Yeah, they had a little bit of that trade injection bounce. Max Christie has been a revelation. I didn't know he was this good. That's awesome. But again, no Anthony Davis. That's one of the two tent poles missing. Kyrie's going to do what he does, which is score a lot of points and not really make guys better. Their floor isn't low because they have a lot of talent, one through, you know, a lot of middling talent as far as good role players, one through, you know, two through six or whatever. But, yeah, without Anthony Davis, there's no one scared of Dallas. And if he does come back, there's no guarantee that Anthony Davis is going to be, you know, healthy for the rest of the season. It's a very, very fascinating end of the season for Dallas and the Lakers watching. They have two rosters that have gaping holes and flaws and have a lot of potential at the top, but we're not going to see them at their best this year.
One team that we have not talked about that was not exactly a major player in the NBA trade deadline is the Denver Nuggets, 2 years removed from an NBA championship. I don't know if people are aware of this, but going into the All-Star break, they had won 8 consecutive games. And they actually have created a teeny bit of space between them and the Houston Rockets for that 3-4 spot. And they are neck and neck now with the Memphis Grizzlies. The Nuggets seem to be playing really good basketball. And James, I don't know if you view it the same way, but it kind of seems under the radar to me. If you're not paying attention, you wouldn't realize that this Nugget team is 36-19 coming out of the All-Star break.
I think their terrible start got them buried by most of the NBA psyche, the NBA fandom psyche. And you're absolutely right. Jimmy Butler to the Warriors, Luka to the Lakers, Anthony Davis' injury, and him going to Dallas. Like, all that's been the talk, you know. Josh trying to come back with Memphis. Like, there's all these other stories going on, and Denver has been chugging away. And they had a pretty shaky first half of the season so far, and then they've kind of taken off. Jamal Murray just had, 55 the other day?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Russ and Joker have been working amazing together. Aaron Gordon's going to be working his way back in shape. He's getting himself back together. Christian Braun has been great as that, you know, young guy fitting in as a starter now. So, like, they've been working on the radar, like I said, 8 in a row. Joker's still the best player in the NBA. Jamal Murray's getting back to that, you know, all-star level form after such a horrible start. Hey, man, they got the corporate knowledge. They just won a championship a couple years ago. You can't count them out.
No, I think one of the big holdups for me with this Nugget team, it was going to be backcourt depth, right? But as you go through the roster and you take a look at guys that are capable, I don't know what you get out of Julian Strother the rest of the way. I don't know what you get out of Jalen Pickett. But really, the backcourt depth has not been as big as a factor as I thought it would be for the Nuggets. It really hasn't been.
I'll say this, man, because, hey, once you get to the playoffs, right, your top six guys are playing 35, 40 minutes a night.
That's it, yeah.
But that's all that matters, and you want to keep them healthy. So if, you know, Russell Westbrook comes in and gives them a good 20, it is what it is. Christian Braun can give them a good 20 or 30 or 40. As long as the top six or seven guys are ready to roll, that's what Denver rolls with. And especially as long as Joker's ready to roll and Jamal Murray's top of the game, their two-man game is what makes them so deadly. So I don't worry about depth when it comes to a team like the Nuggets.
Okay, so then we jump to the Eastern Conference, and we can look at 1, 2, and 3. All go into the NBA All-Star break, winning 8 out of their last 10 games. Talking about the Cavs, Celtics, and Knicks. And I still have this belief. I've had this belief for a while now, at least for a couple of months, that we have the Cavs, Celtics, and Knicks, and then literally everyone else. Maybe if you want to throw Milwaukee in there just for giggles, yeah, go ahead. You got Giannis. I'm fine with that. But, James, it just seems like there is a huge gap between those three teams and everyone else in the Eastern Conference, especially after the trade deadline.
I'm going to go a step further. I'm going to say Cleveland, as great as their season has been, they still belong to be there, and I think Boston really is rounding in the form. They looked really good the last couple of weeks. I don't know if I believe the Knicks yet, all because when Karl-Anthony Towns is your starting center, I don't trust you defensively. We saw Boston just dismantle them again. Boston has crushed them twice this season. They'll crush them in a seven-game series. I don't really know if I count them as contenders. Cleveland, I think, might have actually hurt themselves with their trade, sending out Caris LeVert and Georges Niang for a guy like,
DeAndre Hunter.
From DeAndre Hunter. On paper, it looks great, but like the other night, I watched Niang and LeVert combine for like 40 points and like 12 rebounds and like, 10 threes. And Hunter's good. He'll give you 19 to 25, but he doesn't defend, he doesn't rebound. So I don't know. They might have hurt themselves a little bit, but that's neither here nor there. And Boston, yes, they're looking like the team that we thought they would. I'm still waiting for, it's kind of worrisome that Jalen's not really been rounding in the form yet, but he's a second-half kind of player, so let's hope he rounds in. But, yes, you've been very positive about Boston. Well, I've been kind of doom and gloom and a little bit like a negative Nate, but you have been very positive, and I'm seeing what Boston is looking like when they're getting their footing together.
Yeah, I don't worry about the Celtics at all, especially a team that they've been so battle-tested, not only over the last year. I mean, this is a battle-tested team over the last three, 4 years, right? So I don't worry about teams like that. I did mention Milwaukee, and you had dropped me a text and thought they were big losers at the NBA trade deadline. You weren't a fan of what they did at all, and really what they tried to do was move on from a guy like Chris Middleton, who is not even a shell of his former self, and they bring in Kyle Kuzma. You're not a fan of that.
I think regular season is going to work out fine, and has worked out fine. Again, you know what the big issue I have with Milwaukee? They're still an older team. Kuzma and they got that with the Jackson kid. They have a couple young guys, like two or three young guys with a little athleticism and pop. But other than that, they're older, they're slower, they're creaky. I don't like the Bobby Portis fit. And then, look, Giannis is hurt, and he's, it came out of kind of nowhere, and he's missing time. Can they count on him being healthy down the stretch? I just don't count on Kyle. I don't know. Kyle Kuzma spent like 5 years in purgatory now after the Lakers championship.
Yeah.
Can he unlearn some of those bad habits? So until Milwaukee really puts it together on the floor for like a good 10-15 game stretch, I can't give them the credit.
He's James Holis, kind enough to join us as we get set for the second half of the NBA season. We can't even really call it the second half. I mean, for a team like Cleveland, who's 44-10, they're already at the 54-game mark. Same can be said for Oklahoma City. So we get down to the final 28 games or so of the NBA season. Should definitely be fun. We haven't really talked about the play-in rounds. We haven't talked about what that looks like. We can save that talk for next week. I think we'll get some more clarity throughout this week once we move into next Monday. So, James, always a pleasure to get you on the show. Before I let you go, of course, let us know where we can find more of you.
I'm still going to call it Twitter, and then I'm moving everything kind of over to where the sky is blue. My favorite player growing up was Scottie Pippen. So it's an homage to Scottie, where snotty dripping. I just talk basketball and life and retweet funny stuff.
Love it. Always a pleasure to get you on, James. Thanks again for the time.
You the man, brother.
Let's pause for just a moment. We'll come back, put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Sutherland Studios.